Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Let's take our microphones over to Cork. And as a matter of fact, let us go to the eastern region of County Cork and to a small village called Cloyne. And there, hopefully, we're linked with Conor Cusack. And Conor, you're very welcome to the program.
Adrian, thanks a million for having me. It's great to talk to you.
You know, we saw you, and of course we're familiar with the Cusacks, including, of course, your older brother, Donald Og, and particularly those in sports would know, of course, about the great success of the Cusacks, and particularly in Gaelic hurling, and indeed rumor has it that you started around the time that you were crawling, you got up and started hurling, if that's so. And
I think my grandfather, when we were born, he was the captain by trade, so I think before we were given a nephew or a bottle, I think the first thing that was put in our hands was a hurling stick.
All right. But now you've spent a life, and obviously not only at county level, but at national levels, and playing an All-Ireland senior hurling final in 2006, and that was in Croke Park. It is something that, of course, many people would associate Cork more with Gaelic football than hurling, but not to the Cusacks. You've brought it a long way, and I think, again, for Corkonians, of course, they would like to have it all. That's a part of the strength of Cork, is that anything they do, they feel they should be out front and winners. So anyway, tell us a bit about your own experiences. What was the highlight of your career? Although you still play hurling, but what's the highlight for you?
Yeah, so I suppose, Adrian, it's difficult for me to look beyond 2006. I suppose perhaps people listening to the show might be aware of my story, but from where I had come from in my life to where I was, you know, nearly 20 stone in weight, and within a hair's breadth of perhaps ending my life to playing with my county for a short period of time in an All-Ireland senior hurling final in Croke Park. That was an incredible experience for me. I think that there was two major highlights for me, to be honest, in my career. One was when I made my senior championship debut with my hurling club, Cloyne.
Yes.
Again, because of where I come from, only a few short years before that, to where I was at that time, making where it never looked like I might even play another game with Cloyne, to the point of making the senior team, and obviously then over the next few years, developing my career and my sport, and getting onto the Cork Senior Hurling Panel in 2006. That was a major highlight, because at that time Cork were the strongest team in the country. They were going for 3 in a row of All Ireland, and you had incredible people on that team, you know, there's Brian Coughlins and Joe Deans and Sean Oaks and O'Connor brothers, and you know, from the first day I walked into that dressing room, they made me feel like I was there all my life, and it was an incredibly magical group, because you had John Allen at the helm, and John wouldn't be a manager in the traditional sense. I think he'd have a very holistic view of players, and he created an incredible atmosphere and environment for people to thrive, both as sportsmen and as human beings, and it was an incredibly magical time for me in my life, and I suppose they would have been the two major highlights of me, Adrian.
You know, I think that was probably all the more surprising when your brother, Donal Logan, in fact, when you started talking about mental health issues, as in calling it what it is, depression, leading to suicide, and I suppose it is surprising to some people, at least anyway, that suicide epidemic has been sweeping throughout Ireland, not just recently, but actually if you take a look at the last few years, it didn't change much before the collapse of the Celtic Tiger or afterwards. But talking about depression, even mentioning the word suicide, not that we're much better on this side of the Atlantic, but in Ireland, recognized as a taboo subject. What prompted you to decide to, you know, you're very, very much in focus and in terms of popularity and as an athlete and as a ball player, what got into you, as it were, that says, not only is it time for me to acknowledge, the depression, the path to suicide, but what is it that, why did you want to get it out?
So it's like, Adrian, down in my area here, and up until recently, you know, I wouldn't have been known too well nationally, but I would have been fairly well known down in Cork because of playing GA, I suppose. And, you know, people, because I was comfortable with my own story and my own experiences with my own mental health, well, then over the years, from time to time, people would maybe call to my house just to have a chat and be able to talk about things that were going on for them that they didn't feel comfortable with talking to anybody else about, or maybe looking for a recommendation of a book or a CD or something in the area of mental health. And I just noticed over the last couple of years that amount of people doing that was getting, was increasing fairly dramatically. I also saw in the country that, you know, the National Roads Authority ran a very, very powerful and strong campaign in relation to the huge amount of road deaths that we had in Ireland.
Right.
And, you know, but the reality is, and look, one road death is one too many, but the reality is that there's far, far more people that are ending their lives through suicide than there is through people that lose their lives through road deaths. Yet, there was absolutely nothing going on nationally or publicly that I could see in terms of the area of suicide. We even had a government minister that, so that would be the equivalent of a senator in America,
yes,
who actually ended his life in this country. And the wall of silence after his death was absolutely incredible. I mean, there was no discussion. It was like as if the event had never occurred.
Right.
Those two things, along with, you know, we had obviously the death of the inter-county hurler here in Ireland, Niall Donoghue from Galway, who had only played in the All-Ireland final maybe 12 months before that, who ended his life through suicide. And those three things were going around in my head all at the same time. And the final thing that happened was, I was walking down my street here in Cloyne, and a 75-year-old woman, who I know very well, approached me. And as she got nearer, I could see her kind of shriveling up and she quietening down and she looking around to make sure no one was listening. And she just said, look, Conor, she said, I'm struggling at the moment. I'm not feeling too well. I'm feeling a bit down on myself. And I'm just wondering, is there anything? And she was like whispering out at the time and she was saying, is there anything that you could, you know, is there any book that you could recommend to me or something that could help me at the moment? And I was here to myself thinking, like, you know, this is a 75-year-old woman. She's been on this planet for a long, long time. And yet here she is struggling with an issue that a huge amount of people, I mean, an incredible amount of people, not alone in our country, but worldwide. Like, the World Health Organization have said that by 2030, depression will be the number one health concern in the world. Imagine that. In a short period of time, it's going to overtake heart disease and cancer and all those things is the number one health concern. But yet, here was this woman that was suffering with something that a huge amount of people are struggling with, but was absolutely terrified of anybody hearing that she had this issue. And I was here to myself thinking, it's bad enough to be struggling with depression, with the horror of it, but have that added fear that other people might know that you have this issue because of the huge stigma and taboo that's associated with it. So with all of these things going on, I said to myself, look, you're a guy that's been through this, you've experienced this, you've come out the other side, you know from the people you're talking to and meeting that there's a large amount of people struggling with this. You need, you know, my dad would be the kind of fella who would say that if you talk the talk, well, then you need to walk the walk. And so what I said to myself was, I needed to do something that could help. If it only helps one person,
yeah,
to reduce that stigma and taboo around it, and that would help to give them the comfort and the hope to be able to take that brave step to seek some support and help, then it would have been worthwhile for me to get my story out there to a wider audience. Now, the thing is, when I wrote the blog, it took off to this day. I think it's been seen by over 500,000 people,
right,
and it's just kind of exploded. And in some ways, it surprised me, and in other ways, it hasn't, Adrian, because, you know, if my area down here is a microcosm of what's going on within general society, well, then the amount of people that are struggling with their mental health is a huge, huge amount. And as I say, the figures from the World Health Organization back that up. And, like, the reality here in Ireland, Adrian, is that over 800 people in their lives by suicide each year, but the National Health Society, or the National Association of Suicidology, will tell you that that figure in reality is over 1,000. And over, but like, just to focus on the suicide mightn't be really, you know, it would be doing a disservice to the many others that are suffering in silence. Like,
yeah,
over 60,000 people are admitted in this country to accident and emergency departments each year with self-harming injuries. And like, this is the method that's used most by women that are in despair, you know, that they're looking to give some kind of outer physical expression to their inner pain. And for me, that figure shatters this myth that's out there that our female populations are more effective at dealing with or discussing their real emotional issues. The staggering reality and the awful truth in Ireland is that we have the highest rate of suicide amongst young females in Europe and the second highest amongst young men.
Let's just start with, first of all, and you've come to the fore with this, what was the first sign for you that perhaps what you were feeling, that you were getting into a depression? Is depression something that you wake up one morning, or you wake up in the middle of the night and you have it? Or what are the telltale signs of depression?
Yeah, so I think, Adrian, you know, everybody's depression is unique to them. And what's very often, a lot of misunderstanding with depression is very often it's associated with, we'll say, a person that's feeling low or that might be crying, you know, but there's a lot of other different types of symptoms that's associated with depression, you know. There's anxiety, there's having difficulty sleeping, there's having difficulty concentrating, there's people that are under-eating or perhaps overeating. There are several different symptoms that are associated with depression, and very often people may not even realize that they're actually depressed, you know. But I don't think that you just wake up in the morning and suddenly you're depressed. I think for people, it's like I like to say, you know, it's a gradual decline into that valley of darkness, the same way as it's a gradual climb out of it when you start to get the necessary support and help. So, you know, there's lots of different symptoms around it, and each person will experience it in their own unique way.
Yeah.
But for me, I can remember that at the age of 14, maybe nearing the age of 14, start of 15, I can just remember myself starting to experience panic attacks at that time in my life, and then also starting to feel this, you know, it wasn't sadness, you know, I'd known sadness when my nan had died, I'd known sadness when I'd lost big matches with my club here in Cline, I'd known sadness when I couldn't go out to play with my friends for the fear of being bullied by a few people in my town. This wasn't sadness, it was something that was far deeper and stronger than sadness. And, you know, I started to lose interest in being in the company of my friends, I started to lose interest in my sport, I started to lose interest in my education, I didn't want to be around people, I started to, you know, not look after my diet like I was, or exercising like I was, and that was all something that gradually happened bit by bit over time. Until it got to the point in my life, I suppose, where I was inciting in work at 19 years of age, and I just had, you know, I had what you probably term a nervous breakdown, where I literally, you know, just collapsed inside in the middle of my workplace, and, you know, my body fell to the ground, but inside, you know, and my inner world, you know, shattered into a million pieces, my dignity, my hopes, my dreams, my ambitions all went up in one big bang, you know, but that was a gradual, as I say, wasn't a sudden thing, it was a gradual decline from the age of 14 or 15 to that point at 19 years of age, you know.
Yeah. Connor Cusack, I want to ask you about a depression as you experience, and granted this, as you pointed out, this is peculiar to, it's different for every single solitary person. But was there a point where you crossed over and where you felt, God, I can't even manage this? Was there a particular incident that took place that put you over the top?
I wouldn't think so, Adrian. You know, as I say, you know, I don't think there was any one particular thing. And it's a good question that you ask, because a lot of people that I speak to or meet, you know, they say, you know, I haven't had anything major happen to me in my life. You know, I haven't been abused by somebody. I haven't been, you know, I haven't lost a job or lost, you know, I haven't lost a family member or a close relation. I haven't had anything major happen to me in my life, and I'm not too sure why I'm depressed, you know, and there's still a huge amount of mystery that's associated with the condition, Adrian. And, you know, the thing about it is, you know, I got to Zambia there doing some charity work, rebuilding houses and schools and stuff, building houses and schools there. And people out there that have absolutely nothing, right, they experience depression. I know people that are living in the finest of houses, that are very wealthy people, that have lovely wives and kids. They're experiencing depression. I know people that are employed and unemployed that are experiencing it. The thing about it is, Adrian, it doesn't take into account any of those circumstances. You know, and the reality is, police and politicians, amateur and professional sportsmen, singers, actors, celebrities, housewives, young, old, sports people, it affects all stratospheres of society and all, if you want to use classes of people, it shows no distinction between any of them. And as I say, there's still a huge amount of mystery associated with it. But the more that we can get, which is what the idea of what's happening in New York on the 25th, about, you know, the title of it is opening the door to an honest discussion about depression, suicide, and other issues, the more and more we can have honest and open and real discussions about this area, the more we'll be able to come to an understanding of it. And that's why we have a stake of responsibility to all of our people to have an honest and open debate and discussion on this, and to break down the stigma and taboo that's associated with it, so that we can help to come to an understanding of it. Because where there's silence and where there's darkness and where a thing isn't spoken about, and we've seen in our country, sadly, to our cost, the danger and damage that's associated with silence and other issues. We've seen it with our church. We've seen it with our financial institutions. We're seeing it to our cost now. And we're also seeing it with the huge amount of people that are struggling with their mental health and ending their lives, and those that are living and suffering in silence. We've seen the damage that silence is doing. There can never be a real and a true understanding and an awareness about the areas of mental health and depression and addictions and anxieties until we can get that open and honest debate. Where there's silence and darkness, we can never get there. That's why we need to bring the issues out into the light, where we can see them clearly and come up with solutions, creative and innovative. You know, in this country, Adrian, we've become really, really good in our companies at coming up with innovative and really imaginative and creative new products. We've had some of the most imaginative and creative writers and philosophers and poets that the world has ever known.
Yep.
And so surely within our country, we can come up with innovative and creative and positive solutions in the areas of mental health. We have to, and we have the people, and we have the energy, and we have the brain power and imagination to do that. that's why we need to have the debate on it.
Conor, you travel throughout the country, and let's, you know, give you credit, because this is not full-time, this is not a job for you. This is something that you are, you know, you're giving talks in schools, in universities, in hospitals, sports clubs, churches, cathedrals, business organizations, mental health groups. You actually came here in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, and you saw a people in the Rockaways and in Breezy Point who had pretty much lost everything overnight, who had, again, you mentioned, you know, the hopes, the dreams. These were people who actually had it. They had it in their fist, and all of a sudden, it's gone. It's there. You and so many others from Ireland, and particularly I'd like to give credit to the Gaelic Players Association. We know Desi Farrell has been a guest on this program. You know, with Hurricane Sandy, there was a whole new reason for depression. Does depression hit? I know you've said it doesn't know from rich or poor or status or anything else, but is there something that can happen in an event like that where one can say, well, watch out now, because there will be a lot more mental health issues as a result of this?
Yeah, I have no doubt about that, Adrian, you know what I mean? I think it was, you know, we were out there in January of 2013, and you know, it was an incredibly sobering experience in one way to see and witness the absolute devastation. You know, we saw the pictures on TV, but when we actually arrived out there and walked and surveyed the area, it was just, there was nothing could prepare you for it. And for people to lose their homes and their communities, you know, it has to be devastating for them. Absolutely has to be devastating. And, you know, we were privileged that, you know, a lot of us are tradesmen and stuff like that. So the Gaelic Players Association, who do so much in our country here in Ireland in providing for the needs of our inter-county players, recognised that they could make a contribution to the rebuilding of Breezy Point. And we had a really, really enriching experience out there, and to see the fortitude and to see the spirit of the people there. How could you imagine the place being rebuilt, but you met these people out there, and you could see inside them the desire and the hope they had to see their area and their community rebuilt. And that's why we felt really privileged to be a part and to play a small, very, very small role, you know. And we had an experience. We witnessed this firsthand, the importance of community. We were rebuilding a community centre, and myself and another couple of lads. Obviously, there was a lot of us there, but we were all split up into different areas. But we had the responsibility for refitting out the inside of a community centre that was just absolutely gutted. So basically, we just made sure that we insulated the inside of it and put up the slabbing and put down new flooring and got the place ready. And we were walking away inside that one day, Adrian. I remember it was the afternoon and the sun was shining in the front door. And next thing we could hear these tears, and we turned around and there was an old man in the middle of the floor and he was crying. And I approached him and I just asked the man, was he okay, you know? And he said, look, he said, I'm a member of this community. And he said, you know, I didn't think I'd ever see the day when our community centre, he said, will be back in the shape that it's in now, he said. And he said, you know, we've lost our homes and we've lost everything, he said. But with this community centre being rebuilt, he said, we now have a bit of hope. And he said, we have somewhere where we can all gather and meet again, because this was an elderly man and they used to meet here to play their cards and things like that. And, you know, Adrian, it reinforced for me how we all have a deep need and belonging as people, our deep need as people to belong and to be a part of something. And, I mean, this is a country in America that's, you know, it's a wealthy country, but the needs of human beings, no matter how much money or how much technology evolves, the needs of human beings will never change. The inner needs will always be there. And here was this man, you know, that was,
yeah.
you know, I don't think if we gave him $100,000, would he be as happy just to
yeah.
see the center, because
yeah.
he knew that there was a place where he and his friends could gather again, and he had that bit of hope. And so for me, that's a major part of the work that I'm involved with, that you said, traveling around Ireland. It's about giving hope to people, because hope can help people to get through even the darkest of times. And as I said, that was a real incredible experience for us to see the joy that man had, just to see his community centre up and getting ready, up and going again. And it was something that made a major mark in me, and something that stuck in my head and will always stick in my mind, that, you know, we can have all the different things in the world, all the modern things that come with modern civilization,
yeah.
but the basic needs of wanting to be in other people's company and be social people will always be there amongst us all, you know.
Now that you are coming our way, and you're coming indeed to the Aisling Irish Community Centre, and there will be a workshop. There will be, it's going to take place, by the way, friends, on Friday, April 25th.
I had this impression, or this image, that America was a country that was very open about talking about issues
yeah.
of mental health. But I get a lot of correspondence from people in America, and, you know, they tell me that there is, in America, a huge stigma still associated with the area.
Absolutely.
And it's not something that's spoken about as often as you might think, or as openly as you might think. And that was something that was a real major surprise for me. And
there has to be a starting point, and I think that, you know, you're coming here, you're coming to the Aisling Centre and meeting people who, you know, either have experienced some of this, or who don't know what to do or how to start in terms of even acknowledging for families that are suffering as a result of a suicide. You're doing a great service, I think, in getting people to show up. Show up without reason. I mean, you're talking about, you know, those who would be gladly, those who respond to every type of emergency, as we saw in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, those who, you know, had no, wouldn't even hesitate to become involved in an organization, say, for those who are down on their luck, they, you know, they're there. We have a great sense of mehel, you know, incoming from Ireland and coming from our own backgrounds. Yeah, we'd love to help. How do we do it? I think in what you're doing and in what the Aisling Irish Centre is doing, this is a whole new experience. So who do we expect to come to the Aisling Irish Centre? Who are we? Which of us wants to do that? Do we get over it? Do we, you know, who do you expect when you go around? You have experience in this. When you go around to the schools, and you go around, you're a mental health ambassador for the Gaelic Players Association, who is most likely to come to that first meeting?
Yes, so look, I suppose the first thing to acknowledge, Adrian, is that, you know, I'm not an expert, or I'm not a professional, or I'm not a doctor or a therapist or anything like that. I'm just a guy that had my experiences in my mental health, and the idea of me telling my story ultimately is just to give that bit of insight for people that may have somebody around them that's struggling
yeah.
with their mental health and may not be able to express it at the moment, and to give them an idea of what goes on for somebody that's struggling with their mental health, and also just for people that are suffering, either those that are on the path of getting some support or help,
right.
or those that are suffering in silence, to take that first step. But based on my idea of coming to America, and I'm really looking forward to it, is to just tell my story out there, because that's ultimately what I have. As I say, I'm not a professional or a therapist or anything like that, but I'm a guy that had an experience with my mental health and has spoken about it in a public way. But when I, in general, when I go around giving in Cork's around here in Ireland, you know, what I find, Adrian, is that I think there's an incredible hunger amongst our people now to arm themselves with information and knowledge in this area, because I'm not too sure that is there a family or an individual in our community, whether it be here in Ireland or over there in America, that hasn't been touched by suicide or maybe a family member that has difficulties with
or attempted suicide. You know, there are a lot of attempted suicides, and, you know, when you were talking about, again, the real figure, whether that's in Ireland or here, with respect to the acknowledged suicides, the acknowledged attempted suicides, the statistics don't even come close to the real figure. And I think that there has to be a starting point, and I think that people, you know, should feel that, look, I want to go there, because maybe what I can gather from there, either for myself or for a family member or for something, I might actually be able to do something. It's not going for the curiosity of it. It's actually going to be able to either deal with our own problems or be of help to somebody, you know, who doesn't know where to go. And I count myself among those people who say, I had no idea. If somebody were to say to me, would you be able to, you know, to refer us to somewhere? Yeah, instantly we think of we think of the Irish agencies, the Aisling Irish Centre, the Emerald Isle, the New York Irish Centres. There are places we can go, but these are reference places. These are, again, I think the first thing we've got to do is what we're doing here today, and I thank you for your time. And fair play to the Aisling Irish Centre for making this possible. And again, I want to tell people that hopefully we'll all make an effort to get to the Aisling Irish Community Centre, and that's coming up on Friday, April 25th. It starts at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But we also need to know that if we can't make that, yes, it is being talked about. There is a telephone number which, you know, we can give right now. It's the Aisling Irish Centre, 914-237-5121. Or actually visit the website, again, which is aislingirishcentre.org.
Say, you know, that, you know, blaming will get us nowhere. Mm-hmm. Blaming will solve nothing. If what we need to come to and where we need to come to is understanding. And, you know, there's a saying here in Ireland, Adrian, and perhaps we can finish up with this. There's a saying in Ireland, you know, that it takes community to raise a child. And for me, it takes a community to help a person that's struggling with their mental health to get back to emotional wellness. And, you know, Nelson Mandela said that, you know, as human beings, we're powerful beyond measure. And I have a real, real belief in us as individuals and as communities that we are powerful beyond measure. And I think we need to acknowledge and recognize that incredible saying. And, you know, the French philosopher Rousseau says, there's no greater wisdom than human kindness.
And we look forward to meeting you here. And I want to put people onto the website of the Aisling Irish Centre. I'd give the telephone number, 914-237-5121. Visit the website at www.aislingcentre.org. The day is Friday. The date is April 25th. It starts at 3 o'clock. We'll see you there. Thanks, Connie.
Thanks, Adrian.
Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.